Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So one of the best things about NBC's Emmy Award-winning comedy series, The Office, is that every character on the show actually exists in real workplaces. They're all someone you know. I mean, for example, there's Dwight, the socially obtuse bully and nerd.
There are Jim and Pam, the sweet office romance.
And then there's Kelly. She's the gossipy, celebrity-obsessed, trivial valley girl who just does not stop talking.
What has two skinny chicken legs and sucks at ping pong?
Hi, Kelly.
Guess whose boyfriend it is?
I don't want to guess.
I'll give you a hint. It's not my boyfriend. I don't talk trash. I talk smack. They're totally different. Trash talk is all hypothetical, like, your mom is so fat she could eat the internet. But smack talk is happening, like, right now. Like, you're ugly and I know it for a fact, because I got the evidence right there.
So Kelly's full name is Kelly Kapoor, and in the words of another Office character, she's the dusky, exotic customer service rep, played by the Indian-American actress and writer Mindy Kaling.
Kaling grew up in Cambridge, went to Dartmouth College, and had her breakout success co-writing and co-performing in Matt and Ben, a comedy act about two other Massachusetts stars, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Kaling writes all about it in her new book, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? And Other Concerns. And she's here with us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mindy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's really great to have you. I just want to start off first by talking a little bit more about Kelly Kapoor. And before I get too far, I want to play a clip. It's another one from The Office. And this is just to get a little bit of more of a sense of what Kelly does and what she sounds like. Here she is.
You know what, Dwight? You need to go back there, and you need to pretty woman their asses.
We should start our own mall.
Yeah!
Wait. Actually, that's a really good idea, Kelly.
What did I say? I talk a lot, so I've learned to just tune myself out.
Did you write that line?
I did not write that line.
So what was the genesis of her character?
Well, you know, at the beginning, I think there wasn't that much. I mean, we just knew that there needed to be other people in the office besides the five leads. And Greg had seen me in a play where I played Ben Affleck, so had no real idea of what I could do as a heterosexual woman office worker. But it kind of evolved. You know, we filled in the gaps of what the leads weren't doing. And for the longest time, BJ Novak, who's another writer, mm-hmm. and also Boston native, he and I were the two youngest writers and the two youngest actors, so we kind of brought a little bit of a pop culture thing to the writer's room, and I think that kind of carried over into my character.
And when you mentioned Greg, that's Greg Daniels.
Greg Daniels,
the executive
producer.
Yeah, executive producer. Well, see, the thing about Kelly that I really love is that she's totally frivolous, the Valley Girl. There's an episode in season three, I think, where John Krasinski's character, also a Newton mm-hmm. native, Jim, he asks Kelly what's been going on in her life, and she responds about Shiloh and Suri, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie's daughter, and Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes' daughter.
Yeah.
Like, that is like the reason for her being. And I wonder, is there any aspect to Kelly that tap into your own life for inspiration?
Well, I will say in that instance, I mean, I live in fear because, I went to liberal arts college and I'm a writer on a television show. So I like to think of myself as like a serious person with like a career. So my biggest fear is that everyone thinks that I am simply Kelly Kapoor on the show. So just so you know, that's where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. But I do think that I get swept up in things as well. The royal wedding this summer. But I didn't think I was alone in that. I felt that the nation was completely overwhelmed by that. And that's something that Kelly was, comparably overwhelmed by. Mm-hmm. So yes. I can be a little Kelly-like.
Just a tiny bit.
A tiny bit.
You know, I heard a previous interview with you actually from a couple years ago. I think it's one that you did on Fresh Air with Greg Daniels about writing for The Office. And something that you said that really, really struck me, that when they first talked about who Kelly Kapoor is, Indian-American was like the fifth or sixth adjective to describe her, that the ethnicity wasn't actually a central part of the role.
Definitely, yeah. And that was... I mean, that's also just because I think that comes from the way that I think of myself, which is in the writer's room, it's mostly men and their commoners. And I just think of myself as, I don't even think of myself as a woman. So to me, the remembering that I'm Indian American is sort of, it only comes up, we did that episode Diwali, which mm-hmm. I think is what we were talking to Terry about that time, which is a Hindu holiday.
Right.
So it came up in that instance. But yeah, in general, Indian is not the the top 5-10 qualities or that you would kind of know about Kelly. Or at least I don't, because I forget that I'm Indian.
Well, I am speaking with Mindy Kaling. She is a writer, an actor, an executive producer, one of them, on The Office. And her new book is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns. You can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your question to Mindy Kaling about life at The Office, writing the hit show, maybe even about growing up in Cambridge. And about what's going on in places like Cambridge and Newton that's leading so many young, talented comedians to big, much bigger things. That's a question I want to come to you later about. Is there a nexus of comedy genius somewhere?
Well, Steve Carell is from Concord.
Yeah.
So it was always, you know, when the Red Sox won the World Series in 2004, I think, was it 2004? The first time we were like, there's so many excited people on set. It's a huge Boston family there.
Well, I want to come back to that in a second. But I want to ask you, so what was the inspiration behind writing this book? Is this this wonderful, hilarious compendium of your thoughts?
Thanks.
And a little bit of biography and some really hysterical lists, too, which we'll get to.
Thank you. Well, you know, on our show, we have 18 writers. I've been there since the beginning, so I feel that I have a platform to say what I want to say. But I write a television show that's 21 and a half minutes long once a week, and I get to write it. I write episodes maybe 3 or 4 times a year. But I don't have enough of a place to voice what I'm interested in all the time. I can a lot of times with the show, with like some of the characters and things, but I just had a lot more that I wanted to say, and I tweet, but you know, 140 characters wasn't enough. And I'd compiled all this stuff that I thought, you know what, I just want to write a book.
Mm-hmm. Well, you actually dedicate the book to your parents.
Yes.
Which I thought was very sweet. And they show up several times in other places, and they seem to be quite an inspiration to you. So tell us a little bit about your parents. And was your house kind of generally a funny place? Were there comedians in the family?
My house is a very deeply funny place, both on purpose and not on purpose, as everyone's family is. But I've been so lucky because my parents are really my best friends and have been that way pretty much since I went to college. I mean, when I was younger, I was terrified of them because they're both, you know, disciplinarians and very serious-minded people. But they have great senses of humor, loved watching Seinfeld with me, let me stay up and watch Saturday Night Live. And they never wanted me to become a doctor, an architect, or engineer, which is what my family all is. Like, but there's no comedy writers or actors on either side of my family. But they were always like, sure, if you can do it, then do it. But they, you know, I get along with them great. Yeah, they show up in my book a lot. Like, maybe, like, too much. But they're a huge part of my life.
Well, and you get along with them, too. So, I mean, that's the thing that really struck me is that so many comedians, they use their family as sort of this negative fuel for their comedy. But that doesn't seem to be you at all.
No, you know, my mom's an OBGYN.
So you called her a gossip that does pap smears.
You know, my brother said that. So I distanced myself from that remark. But I did think it was funny. But my mom's an OBGYN, so she's sort of seen everything, which is really nice because she's not very traditional, which I think is great. And my dad is an architect, but he's an incredibly adventurous guy. Like he's always had wanderlust, and since he lived in Nigeria and Kenya and Ceylon and Hawaii, like he traveled so many places. So they're both very like adventurous people, and that kind of carries over. I mean, they've been on The Office. They were up to acting on the show, which I thought was pretty great.
In that same episode, the
Diwali
episode.
Yeah. And there's a constant argument at my house, you know, that which one was better than the other one in the show in terms of acting. I think they're comparably pretty good, I would say, the both of them.
Well, tell me a little bit about what your high school life was like, because that's where you opened the book. And you went to Buckingham Brown and Nichols.
Yeah.
A school, obviously, here in the area. And just tell listeners, how do you describe yourself as a high school student?
So I was a bright kid. I wasn't the brightest kid. And I knew that I wanted to perform. I loved performing. But at our high school, even though it was in a really great, rigorous prep school in Cambridge, we didn't have like an improv troupe or a playwriting program because it was just a high school. So I didn't really know how I wanted to do this. And I would audition every year, get my hopes up to be a lead in the play, and never once was ever the lead in any play. And didn't really have like any solos in any of our like singing groups or anything. So like there was no there was nothing there that really said, like, you could go into this professionally. But it wasn't really until I got to college where I found that kind of confidence. And I was able to kind of make a claim and something in a big way.
Well, so even though you didn't necessarily get the direct encouragement to consider comedy as a professional career, I mean, did you have a sense when you were in high school that were funny?
Yeah, I always kind of thought I was funny. Like, I always, like, which is, I guess I'm certain I wasn't funny, because, like, nobody who eventually ends up being professionally funny was probably funny in high school. They're most likely the kids. The kids who end up being funny are the ones that, like, love comedy and are watching it all the time. So they're actually more just, like, the creepy nerds who are always talking about Kids in the Hall or always talking about Saturday Night Live because it's important to them. But you don't really get your own voice, I don't think, till later. If kids are funny when they're teenagers, I happen to believe that it's probably because it's unintentional. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when I see these kids in high school doing stand-up comedy, I'm like, what? This is so weird. Just grow up and, like, find out, like, be normal, find out what you, like, are, who you are, and then just do it later.
I'm speaking with Mindy Kaling. She is an actress and writer and one of the executive producers from The Office. She is also a Cambridge native, and her new book is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns. Let me ask you about that title and high school. I mean, were you worried that people were hanging out without you?
Oh, I knew that they were. I mean, I didn't. That is almost like the title is like even too giving myself too much credit. Like, there was legions of cool. And the thing about BBNN, which was extra frustrating, was that it wasn't like there was the jocks and they were so cool, but they weren't good at school. The popular kids were, like, on the varsity soccer team, and they had gotten, like, a 1600 on the SAT. Like, that was the kind of school it was. So you couldn't even be like, yeah, they're a dumb jock. Wait till you're like, oh, they're going to Princeton. Okay, they're actually really accomplished student and, like, and everything else. So that was kind of the minor hell that was high school, I mean.
But nevertheless, you write really, humorously, maybe a quality of your writing is that it's difficult to tell what might be actually your real experience versus just pure comedy, because you have a section in one of the chapters about life in high school where you talk about how the John Cougar Mellencamp song Jack and Diane is one that you really don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Then tell people why it is that you don't like it.
Well, I mean, the thing about that song is that it really fetishizes, I would say. Yeah, I'm going to say fetishizes a very a high school experience that is, in my mind, can only be lived by really attractive white teenagers who are not studying, who are not at home helping their parents out, who are just being, like, idle. And, you know, like, they hang out behind the Tasty Freeze or something. They just are loitering and just, I think, being bad kids and having sex and stuff. Like, and I just, and then the song, the lyric of the song that has always struck me as so sad, as he goes, which is like, oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? That's what you consider the thrill of living, is hanging out in a parking lot? So if you weren't popular and you weren't being somehow, your parents didn't care where you were after school, and you sort of listen to that song, and it's just like, wow, I feel completely devalued.
Mm-hmm. And you write that the song, instead of Jack and Diane, the one that you would request if it existed would be a little ditty about a hardworking Vietnamese girl who helps her parents with the franchise Holiday Inn they run and does homework in the lobby, and including a character named Ari, a hardworking Jewish boy who does volunteer work at his grandmother's old age home, and they meet after school at Princeton Review.
Yeah, these are my people. Like, I mean, that's hardworking ethnic kids with chips on their shoulders. Like, that's who I want to be around. I want my kids to be like that, I guess.
So you graduated from BBNN and then went to Dartmouth.
Went to Dartmouth, yeah.
And was it there, as you were hinting earlier, that you really realized comedy was this thing that you could do, and you could do it well, and maybe even do it as a profession?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So what happened?
Well, I started auditioning for things and then kind of getting them, which was different. You know, in my high school, the people that were the leads in our senior play had been the leads in our, like, when we were in sixth grade. You know what I mean? Like, these are these dynasties of kids and families that were the leads all, like, 11 years of school. And when I went to Dartmouth, it was sort of like a fresh slate, and I had a lot of confidence to do. So I immediately, like, got into our improv troupe and our singing group, and you know, by junior year, I was writing a cartoon there, and I just sort of got to have this great, I got to feel like a cool kid because I was actually succeeding and stuff. But I also mentioned that at Dartmouth, this was like in our small like niche of people who like thought that was cool because, you know, it's a school where like I love Dartmouth College, I really do, but like I wasn't in a sorority or anything, so like there was a whole other world that existed at Dartmouth that I didn't really know about. I knew and was like friendly with or whatever, but I didn't like participate in that much.
Well, I'm speaking with Mindy Kaling. You can give us a call and ask your question of her about her life, about her career, about writing and acting in The Office. About anything. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Let me just get a quick call in here. George is calling from Watertown. You're on the air, George.
Yes. Hi, Mindy. Do you have any recollection of being in the Christmas Revels when you were a teenager?
Yes.
I'm the music director of Revels.
And
I remember you were.
Yeah, Sasha's father. How are you?
Sasha's father, whom you knew at Dartmouth.
Yeah,
yes.
Of course.
And how did you tell me? What do you remember about the Christmas Revels?
Oh my! How much
Anything?
Do I remember? I was 14 when I did it.
You were 14.
I remember feeling very young and inexperienced, but being very like chatty and trying to make friends with people who were much older. I think I remember being incredibly annoying. But listen, I don't need you to confirm or deny that. I just was, and the Sanders Theater was like so gorgeous. But I had such a great time.
It was great. Well, I like to think that we were a small piece of your career.
Absolutely. I love the Christmas Revels, and it's still happening at Sanders.
Yeah, as much as ever. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Come back and see us.
George, do you remember how Mindy did?
I only remember that she was 14, and I think she was wonderful. It was it was a long time ago, 1994. So I'm a little vague as to what role she played, except she was a member of the adult chorus. She was not a child.
George, thank you so much for your call. Mindy Kaling, let's fast forward a little bit to when you moved to New York City, because it was there that you wrote, or co-wrote, I should say, Matt and Ben, and a play about Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And give us a little bit of the synopsis of what this play was about.
So the play was a very short play. It's about 50 minutes long. It's a one-act, basically a one-act. And it's a very absurd, and it's a really weird play. Not the weirdest part of it, actually, is that I'm playing Ben Affleck, and my best friend Brenda, who wrote the play with me, is playing Matt Damon. Now, to make it even stranger, Brenda is like 5'10", and like a very like thin, willowy girl with like long blonde hair. She went to Dartmouth with me, actually. Mm-hmm. Where she's still my best friend. I saw her last week, and I played Ben Affleck, who is the sort of taller one of the two. So that was also very confusing. But it was a very absurd play, and the tone of it was, I say in the book, it was like X-Files meets The Odd Couple, because even within that weird, like parameters of the play, a supernatural act happens. So. I still think it's a very funny, very strange little play, and that got a lot of that's what basically got us our first attention when we lived in New York.
Well, you write in the book that around the time where you and your friend Brenda were conceiving of the play, I mean, it was the early 2000s.
Yeah, it was 2002.
Yeah, so
2001, 2002.
So yeah. Thereabouts. So, you know, Ben Affleck especially was very much sort of the center of the pop culture scene. Mm-hmm. And there's just a little part of the book that you write that I want to read. You write, in the early 2000s, the actor Matt Damon and Ben Affleck loomed large in your lives, specifically because of the phrase Bennifer, which I'm sure many of our listeners will remember, whether they want to admit it or not. And you write, without Bennifer, we wouldn't have Brangelina or Tomcat or even the less used Jabrobra. I can't even say that without laughing out loud. Jabrobra, James Brolin and Barbara Streisand. That is the gift that Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez gave to us that has withstood the test of time. And the other gift that you mentioned that Matt and Ben, the play, gave to you is that it got you attention. It was really well received. It was reviewed in the New York Times, and the run was expanded to multiple nights, and even expanded to L.A. So mm-hmm. what happened?
Well, that was the first time when I started making money as a playwright and an actor. That was the very first time. So it was like 22, and we were doing the show. It was a 2-person show, and it wasn't very much money, but we were able to. The show was a big enough hit in New York City in downtown theater called PS-122. It was a 100-seat theater that we were able to replace us with a different cast playing us. And then we went to L.A. and did it at a similarly small theater in L.A., which is not a theater town, and that was an incredibly depressing period of our lives. But it did let Greg Daniels, who was on The Office, come and see me. And from that, he hired me on The Office.
Now, is the writing process that you went through for Matt and Ben, is that something similar to what you use when you write for The Office now? Because in the book, you write that it was really organic mm-hmm. in terms of just batting around ideas with your friend Brenda about, you know, what would Matt say, what would Ben say? Is that something that you do today when you write for The Office?
It was absolutely the same, because what it was the reason why being a comedy writer is the best job in the world, is that you're just sitting in a room with eight people, most of whom are your friends, and you're just, like, messing around. And you, there's a snack room adjacent, and someone is there writing down everything. So it's very focused joking around. And you're allowed to go on tangents and talk about what movie you hated over the weekend and which actress is overrated. And you can have all that stuff as part of the process. Like, you're allowed to do that. NBC pays you to do that. And then you come back and you start talking about, well, this is the prank that Dwight should do on Jim. And that was what happened with me and Brenda when we were writing Matt and Ben, except instead of it being Jim and Pam, it was Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, two actors we didn't know and didn't know anything about.
Mm-hmm. And you've been on The Office for several years now. And how many episodes have you written?
I am turning in my 23rd episode tomorrow.
You're turning in tomorrow. And on Thursday, there's going to be
the 22nd episode is airing, yes. It's the Christmas episode.
You know, if we could take a step back, there's a lot I want to talk to you about The Office.
I love this. This is my most favorite thing I've ever done.
About working at The Office.
No, talking about myself. including working at The Office.
Well, I wonder about the character of Kelly Kapoor. When we started talking about her, how do you think she's evolved over time?
Well, to be frank, I think I've become a better actor. So I think that has helped the character just be nuanced. I think that can't help but happen when the actor gets better. I think in the first couple seasons, definitely, I had this thing of me being like, I can't believe they're letting me act. And you can see that on this. You can see, like, Mindy Kaling, the person in Kelly Kapoor's costume, like, being like, oh my God, this is really happening. So I think that as I got more used to it, and I've been in the show now, this is the 8th season, it's like that is gone. So I feel just more confident playing the character.
Is there a way that the character of Kelly has changed that you didn't anticipate?
No, I would say there's not. I mean, I talk about how on a comedy show, one of the things that can happen to actors, and I love actors, but this can happen because you want to do the very best job you can acting, is you want your character to become very three-dimensionalized, which is great, which is usually fantastic. However, on a show that has like 18 characters on The Office, if every character on the show was going to become three-dimensionalized, for some characters like Steve Carell's character Michael, we wanted him to because we wanted people to root for him, not just be like, oh my God, he's so embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But if every other small tertiary character is wanting to have a huge backstory about, you know, everything going on in their life, the show becomes like 30-something. And it's like, you can't laugh at anyone because no one is just being like a jerk or kind of slutty or drinking too much or mean. It's all like, well, they're being mean because of what happened to them. And like, and when you watch, you come home after work, you don't want to watch that. You want to laugh. So I think that the number of people for whom, you know, the thing about Kelly, I will say, is that I haven't really wanted her to be this character who we see. Well, why did she become so shallow? What's moving her to do that? Because I think it makes the show less interesting.
But on the other hand, I mean, the characters, since the show has been on for 8 years, within even that 8 years, they develop in a sort of forward line, right?
Definitely.
From season to season.
You learn more about them.
Yeah.
And that's through jokes. You just find out.
Well, I wonder because, I wonder, some people out there might think that the first couple seasons of The Office were especially funny because there was still a lot of, like, cringe-inducing humor.
Right.
And that was really its trademark. And, you know, there's a line of thinking out there that says there's a little less of that now. I mean, it's still funny, but maybe not so edgy. I mean, do you think there's any credence to that the humor sort of developed in a different direction?
Well, you know, when a show is starting, you don't know anything about the characters. So the excitement of learning more and more about them is what keeps you going for the first couple seasons. After a while, you know a hell of a lot about, like, Andy Bernard or Jim Palpert and things like that. So the surprises can't come from stuff you don't know about them, but from the surprises come from them acting the way you think they do in new and interesting ways. And, like, you know, show is on for 8 seasons. I love our show. I think, especially this episode on Thursday, this Christmas episode, I think is so funny. Like, if it sounds narcissistic or egotistical, but I think it's one of the funniest episodes that I think I've ever written, and certainly, and I think it's just great. So I think we can surprise ourselves. I mean, I love Modern Family. I love Shameless. I love Eastbound and Down. I love the shows that have come up since we've been gone. And I'd also be the first to admit that a lot of it is because they're also new. They have that great quality, too. I'm a TV writer, so I'll still like them 5 years from now, whereas, you know, when other people are like, well, what else is new? But, yeah, I mean, I was 24 when I started on the show, and now I'm 32. So you are like, it's hard to come up, you know, to always be the new shiny thing.
You know, in the last minute that we have, I wanted to return to a question that we sort of hinted at the top of the interview, and that is you grew up in Cambridge. B.J. Novak, also a writer and actor on The Office, is from Newton.
Yeah.
So is John Krasinski, another actor on The Office. Steve Carell, as you mentioned, originally from Concord. Another one of your comedy heroes, Conan O'Brien, also from Massachusetts. When you think about it, there are a lot of really smart, very funny, very influential people in American comedy right now who have come from here. I mean, do you have any theory as to what's going on or what was going on in the 80s that led to this like really bumper crop of comedic talent?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Conan, because I think for BJ, John, and I, we're all the same age. We all graduate from high school and college the same year. But for us, Conan O'Brien is really what I think a lot of people think of Johnny Carson from, like, a generation a little bit older than us. Like, he is the guy. We grew up with – he started the show when we were in high school, and he was so quick with interviews. And I think that part of it is there's definitely like this Harvard connection, I think, with the Lampoon, where, you know, we think comedy writers are cool, you know, in addition to comedy actors, you know, Greg Daniels and Conan and stuff. So I think maybe that has something to do with that. I think it must.
Well, Mindy Kaling is the author of the new book, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns? Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Mindy Kaling is also an actress and Emmy-nominated writer for The Office. She will be at the Brattle Theater doing a reading tonight. That's sold out, but you can still catch her this Thursday when the 8th season of The Office premieres on NBC. And there's also an excerpt of Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me on our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us, because coming up, Zip Code Stories goes to Framingham, and we'll also have music from Kingsley Flood. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.